On the Bechdelcast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdelcast.
Hi, and welcome to the Bechdelcast. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Jamie.
And we're here to talk about movies and how they portray women.
That was great.
Yeah, that was like the most succinct I've ever done it.
I know. It used to take us 5 minutes.
Oh, man. We are growing.
Thank you so much. We're growing as people. Yeah. Oh, how's your day?
My day has been okay. Oh, so I went out for a jog. I jog. Not
wow,
to brag.
Brag.
And I ran past a guy who was chugging a box of Frenzia on the sidewalk. And I was like, that's unusual. And then I ran between him and a car, and there was someone in the car filming him. So I was like, that makes more sense. He's doing it for like a bit. Someone's filming him. I get it. But like for a split second, I was like, why is this guy just chugging a box of Frenzia on the sidewalk in Los Feliz?
Do you think it was real? Like real Frenzia? Well, I guess it'd be more work to just...
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to empty out the bag, fill it with water or whatever.
Why do that?
Why not just chug Frenzia?
I burned myself out on that. I did that a couple times in college. And now I just associate it with the smell of the basement apartment I used to live in. Mm. Can't do it anymore.
Yeah, not that it's great wine to begin with.
No. My day was bad.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay. Let's start the episode.
Okay, let's do that. We are here with a wonderful guest. She is a comedian. She is a cellist. True story. She also has a show here at Nerd Melt in Los Angeles, California. Nina Daniels.
Yay.
Hi.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And that's the end of the episode. Bye.
We did it.
We're talking about a movie called Hidden Figures.
I've never heard of it.
Talk to us about, when did you see this movie? I mean, it came out, you know, not long ago, a few months ago.
I actually saw it through SAG Awards in my living room on my laptop.
How fancy. Oh, nice.
Yeah, because when you're in SAG, they give you screeners.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So that was one of the screeners that I watched and completely fell in love with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah. I saw it in the theater by myself.
I wish I had seen it in theater.
Yeah, it was great. I go to the movies by myself often, and who knows why. Well, I'll talk to you about
it. It's a nice experience.
With my therapist. Yeah.
It is.
No, it's very therapeutic for me to go to the movies by myself. But here's the thing. I don't let myself get emotional in public. And it's another thing I need to talk to my therapist about. Do I even have a therapist? No, I don't. I should make an appointment. But I have a really hard time. Like, I can't let people see me cry. And this movie made me so emotional. I was, like, on the verge of tears the entire time because I'm just like, oh, these women, they're being mistreated and all this injustice. They're uplifting each other. And I was, like, just nearly crying the entire time. And I was like, I can't let anyone see me cry.
I couldn't be you. Literally, a commercial makes me cry.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love you. I'm like, oh, it's so sweet. I cry. Everybody laughs at me at movies because they see something and everybody just looks at me to see if tears are coming down.
Yeah, no, I repress my emotions and it's not healthy.
I don't.
But that's good.
Yeah.
I let it all hang.
I should repress mine maybe a little bit more. It interferes with your life.
Really?
Well, I mean, sometimes it's like, man, I gotta take a walk sometimes just to like walk off my emotions and then return to, I don't know. Today my therapist was like, I think you should spend the weekend inside and wear beta blocker sunglasses. Like, anyways, let's talk about the movie.
So yeah, I saw it in the theater the first time. I really loved it. I thought it was great. Jamie, when did you see it?
I saw it last week and I really, really liked it. It was one of the movies that I wanted to see over the holidays and wasn't able to because my mom wanted to see the Jackie O movie, which was not so great.
Mm. I passed on that one.
I know.
Good
well,
job, good, job.
Good call. It
good
was
call.
Not.
Oh.
It was a stinker.
Ouch.
But
I still feel ill from it.
Right? It's just, it was a drag. But that's the Kennedy assassination for you.
Wow.
And this movie made me feel so good and, like, was the sort of movie that I Felt good about days after watching it.
Not as good as it made me feel.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yes. Talk about that.
I mean, well, first of all, I did want to see it in the movie theater, but I was so excited about it that I couldn't even wait because I had this screener. I'm like, I have to see this, like, right now. For many reasons. One, which a lot of people probably wouldn't know, but all three women are, or were, some of the past, members of the same sorority that I'm in. Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.
Whoa.
All three. So that was, like, really enlightening. It was like, oh, my goodness. I mean, because, quick history lesson, but, you know, in a African-American sorority, we don't just pledge or participate in undergrad. It's like that movie The Firm, once you get in, you can't get out. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, you become more active once you get to, once you graduate.
Oh,
you
so join, it's like a
you join what's called grad chapter, yeah. Or you're inactive like me and should be joining grad chapter, just pay your dues, and you're just like a general member. But yeah, so it was like, I was really proud. I was a really proud sister of Alpha Kappa Alpha watching them. Like, of course they were all sorors. It made me very proud.
Very nice.
That's awesome.
And a little cocky.
Yeah.
You know, that made me excited. And also made me excited as, you know, an African-American woman to see just three brilliant women. And I thought the director did such a great job of showing their brilliance and also showing what they had to deal with, but not, like, dumbing them down or not making it some sappy, like, woe is me story. It's a lot of times, you know, some of these movies are like, oh, the poor black person had to struggle through. It was like these women were so confident and so, like, in the car scene when the car broke down.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you could walk or sit in the back of the bus. And they were like, oh, no, I don't think so. Yeah. I was like, that's me right there. Like, oh, I don't think so. Yeah. That was like a prime, like, also, because it showed the pride and the almost part of the arrogance of like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
And during, that was 1961.
Uh-huh.
1961. That was very impressed.
That scene ends with them fixing the car, and then the cop pulls up, and you're like,
oh, yeah. Oh,
fuck this fucking cop. What's he going to do?
Yeah, in advance.
Like, and then...
part of the storyline.
Right, yeah. But then they talk to him. They have to convince him that they're like, yes, we work at NASA. We do important things. Like, we're... And he's just like...
I didn't know there were... Women.
Yeah. Because you knew that's not what he was going to say.
I didn't know it was brilliant.
But then he offers to escort them the rest of the way. And I wrote down what
Mary says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Because she's like, three Negro women are chasing a white police officer down a highway in Hampton, Virginia, 1961. This is a God-ordained miracle.
This is a God-ordained miracle. I love that. I wrote that down as well. Mm-hmm.
Caitlin, do you want to do the recap?
The recap, yeah.
The Caitlin recap.
Oh, man. The story is about three black women, Catherine Goebel, who becomes Catherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughn, and Mary Jackson. Stories based on real-life events. These were real women. They were all employed by NASA. This is a movie set in 1961. We're in the middle of the space race with the Russians. You know, the U.S. is trying to pull ahead. The Russians get a man in space first. Everyone's freaking out. Catherine Goebel did a lot of the analytic geometry to calculate the trajectories and the landing and takeoff for the rockets. Meanwhile, Mary Jackson she wants to be an engineer, but she can't because she doesn't have quite the right qualifications. Or she has the right qualifications, but they're like finding ways to suppress her ability to actually be an engineer because she's a woman. So she has to like petition and get a court date and all this stuff and so that she can take classes to get the qualifications. Long story short, she finally gets there. Yay. She becomes an engineer. But she's working in like this engineering department. They're trying to figure out how to make it so that the spacecraft that they're trying to launch into space is ready for the astronauts to actually be there and that it's safe so they don't all die in space. And then the third main character, Dorothy Vaughn, she's essentially a supervisor, but they won't give her the title or the pay. And she's supervising a group of like 20 other black women who are all computers and doing other, you know, important math and analytics and stuff like that for NASA. And it's basically just, it takes place over the course of a few months and they're all just trying to do the work that needs to be done to get people in space.
Yay.
The end.
I think it's, you know, cool to point out that, you know, they were called computers because there were no computers yet. IBM, they were just waiting to get their IBM.
Yeah. Other characters who are important. Catherine's boss, played by Kevin Costner. This is the first time I have not hated him in a movie. So good job.
I like him.
I am. Yeah. Kevin Costner. Kevin Kline.
Yeah. Kevin Kline's always been great.
Kevin Costner.
Oh, man.
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. Yeah. Man, more Kevins, please. Oh, nah,
Kevin Hart. Good.
So he's her boss. Then there's Jim Parsons. I forget his character's name.
Oh, I love
something.
His character's name. It's Paul. Paul Staffin, I think.
Yeah.
I love Jim Parsons. He looks like a little alien all the time. He's just this little alien looking guy.
Oh, his character, though, so despicable.
Yes.
He was so good at this movie.
Yeah.
He's a bad alien in this movie.
Kristen Dunst plays a woman. I don't entirely know what her job is.
Mrs. Mitchell. She's like a coordinator.
Mrs. Mitchell. So that's the cast of main characters.
Yeah.
All right. The first thing I want to say about this movie is it calls attention to the fact that, like, one of the most significant historic and scientific feats of the 20th century and also, like, I don't know, all of history, which was putting a man into space, was made possible by a group of black women who you've probably never heard about until now. Because I didn't learn this stuff in history class. And that's why, I mean, obviously the title of the movie suggests that these are hidden figures because we don't, like, they don't teach us this. Like, well, we didn't learn about this. I didn't.
I think that it kind of, like, that extends to the movie universe, too. Because think about how many fucking space movies there are. There are a billion. And every time you cut to the control room, there's a white guy in there. There's, you know, like, there's barely any women at all, not to mention a person of color. And so it's like, I don't know. I was thinking a lot about that during the movie, too, of just like, you know, like Armageddon, Apollo 11, and one of the characters, I forget.
13. Sorry to mansplain that to you.
But who Catherine is later involved with, and like, you would never see that reflected.
Well, I knew about Catherine Johnson.
You did?
Oh. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I had actually forgotten. My dad was like, you wrote a paper on her. I was like, oh, good. You know, but I was really young. But I definitely think seeing the movie definitely gave me a different...
It brought awareness to
a lot of people in a very different way. Yeah. I mean, my parents were great because we learned about a lot of African-American people who were outstanding and amazing and changed history that were not just Martin Luther King. I love them, but, you know, or... I would say Benjamin Banneker. I don't know if anybody knows who he is. I'm like, Paul Robeson. And I mean, there's a lot of people that when I was a kid, my parents, we would get a list of names to write a paper. Mm-hmm. And I did not go to school normally with many other African Americans, especially not any teachers. So it would be like me in the class. And it would be all these historical figures, but none of them would be black. Mm-hmm. And my parents would be like, they would cross it out, and they'd be like, you're doing a paper on this person. So I would bring it back
to school. That's
and I'd be
amazing.
Like, this is what I'm doing it on. And the teacher, you could tell the teacher looked like, I did not assign that to you, but I'm definitely not going to challenge you on this. Yeah. Yeah. Because good luck challenging my mother. Good luck with that. Mm-hmm. You would lose that battle hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in rural Western Pennsylvania.
I grew up in rural Long Island.
Yeah. I mean, man, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I didn't have parents to be like, you're going to do this paper on an African-American person. And so, like, I don't think we talked about in history class, like, any notable figures in history who were black, except maybe Harriet Tubman. And not many women either. I mean, like, I knew about Betsy Ross because she made a flag or something. But, like, other than that, it was just a bunch of white dudes.
My favorite woman growing up was Shirley Chisholm. She ran for president, first black woman.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she was part of the women's suffrage movement. Like,
yeah.
She's no joke, man. She was like, I remember like being a kid and being like, I want to be like her.
Yeah.
She was so, best thing I mean, like, we were lucky. We were very fortunate. We were exposed to so many people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was like really interesting to see. And I mean, I think what I love most about Hidden Figures as well is that it also showed the softness of African-American women, mm-hmm. meaning like they weren't like, and I say it's like, I love being strong and the portrayal of strong African or black women, but like these women were known for their brains,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have to put anything on it. They were just being who they are. and that's what made them up, is their intelligence. And I felt like they led by their intelligence. And that to me was like such a refreshing thing to see.
Yeah, I love that. I loved that. One of the other main things this movie does is that it just shows how many hurdles these women had to jump over in like every part of their job and outside of their job, just to like prove that they're capable. They're like, yeah, we are.
Yeah,
we can do this.
Of doing and the everyone's job they're just currently
like,
doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And everyone's just like, I don't know about that.
But it's also,
you have to prove yourself.
It's also a testament to when someone says, cream always rises to the top. Literally, they needed them because no one could do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, no one else could do it, you know? So it's almost like if you can make yourself so useful that nobody else could do it. And it was interesting, like, also, too, about the engineering with Mary. Mm-hmm. And that character even, you know, saying, you know, I'm Jewish and I came here from. But the thing is, like, you're still a man.
Yeah.
You know, and you're still a white man in America. Like, so it was really interesting to see him have that. Because her obstacle wasn't just being a woman. Where she needed to take the courses, they didn't allow African Americans.
Right, it's a segregated
school.
So
that was really, I mean, being a woman was part of it. But second layer of it is they didn't allow women, you know, women of color.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Or people of color, for
hashtag
that matter.
Hashtag intersectionality.
I mean, she had to go to court to take a class at, like, I think it was like a high school she had to go take it at. At yeah. A night class.
Yeah.
Which was like, wow.
Yeah. There's so many steps she had to go through just to be able to get the credentials she needed to do the job that she was already qualified to do.
Yeah, my mom would have totally done that. No, for real. My mom would have been like, excuse me. Here we go.
and it was nice to see. I mean, it wasn't like a main focal point, but it was nice to see their home lives as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that the other roles, because I feel like it would have been easy to just keep this in the workplace, and it would have still been powerful if it was just in the workplace. But it was nice to see not just the professional hurdles, but trying to like maintain a life for their kids and all this stuff, because they still have all the pressures associated with motherhood.
Right. Yeah. All three of those women had young children.
Yeah.
And Catherine was a single mother. At least she started out that way. She ends up marrying Jim Johnson.
I love that relationship.
Yeah.
I love like, you know, they showed such a respectful, like, black love, which I loved. I was like, oh, this is so sweet.
When he like apologized to her for doubting her when they first met.
Right.
I was like, all right.
Well, a lot of men make that mistake.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, because what is the first thing he says? Because he's like, oh, I understand you work at NASA. And she's like, yeah, we do all the, you know, the calculations. And he's just like, oh, they let women do. And then he like stops talking. He's like, oh, man, I fucked up real bad. And she's like, I'm going to walk away and you should shut up. And then like, the next time he's like, I owe you an apology. She's like, yeah, I'm waiting for it.
Mm-hmm. It also showed the complications in Mary's marriage.
Right.
Which I loved as well. Mm-hmm. The juxtaposition of that relationship versus that. And also Mary not like, she didn't play down or come down for her husband, even though he had all these like issues and concerns. She was just like,
yeah,
nah, I'm gangster. I'm doing this. Like, you shouldn't believe, you should not, you know, which is, I'm such an optimist. It's so hard for me to like, look at the glass is never half empty to me. It's always half full. So I was like, go Mary.
Yeah.
You can do this.
Well, yeah, just seeing these three main characters who pretty much at almost every point in the movie just refuse to be bulldozed by literally the entire world that's trying to bulldoze them.
Right.
And you know, like you were saying, it's just like making themselves so like incredibly intelligent and useful that you can't, didn't like, they couldn't have done it without them. It
was, and also the intelligence wasn't, it wasn't forced. It was like quiet intelligence. That's what I love.
Yeah, it just like came across very organically.
Which is how we really are.
They're doing the job.
Yeah, they're just. I wanted to talk a little bit more about that scene. It's one of the opening scenes where they're broke down on the side of the road and Dorothy is like fixing the car. And I mentioned in an earlier episode of this podcast where I'm like, oh, I hate that trope where like to show a woman, to show that she's not just like any other woman, she's good at fixing cars. And like, yeah, it's an annoying trope, but like, that's not what happened in this movie. Like, they broke down. I believe that character knew how to fix cars.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's something like in Transformers, like you see Megan Fox leaning over the hood of a car, basically like having sex with a car, male gaze all over the place. Like, lingering up and down.
But was she supposed to be fixing it?
Driver?
Yeah, but like, it's
she was.
Just,
I thought she was making love.
Oh, I thought she was just
it.
Making love to it. Like, literally, all I thought it was like, I didn't even realize that she was actually supposed to be fixing
I
that car.
So.
Wait, yeah, I was like, what was she doing next to that car?
I was like, this is the part in the movie when they want some real, like, they want to sell sex.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then in this movie, like, Dorothy's like splayed out, lying on the ground, like under the car. Actually, how you actually fix cars.
Yeah.
It wasn't sexy. It was just like, yep, she just is trying to figure out what the problem is.
And in context of the movie, like, that made total sense.
Yeah.
It didn't feel tropey at all.
No.
Like, and actually, and you saying it, I didn't even think about it until right now, you know, you bringing it up.
It was just like a normal thing that happened. You're like, yep, this checks out.
Yeah. And that wasn't, I feel like the reason people usually do that trope is because whoever the female character is like portrayed as like so unrealistically that they're like, but wait, she's grounded, and these women are portrayed realistically for the duration of the movie. So it's like, cool, yeah, they can fix cars.
Mm-hmm.
They're so much cooler than me. Part of what made me love this movie even more was there was a few campaigns around the time when it was actually in theaters where a lot of people were donating to send classes of kids to go see this movie. And it's amazing that as many classes as did got to see it in the theater. But just thinking about, like, years down the line, this will be, like, watched in history classes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of movies like it. And that to me was like so exciting of like, imagine being whatever, 7 or 8 years old and seeing this movie. It would be.
Yeah. I think a couple of the actresses, like, I think Taraji P. Henson, I think also maybe Octavia Spencer, like, bought out theaters.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I believe they bought out theaters so that people,
go in and see it.
Yeah.
Oh man.
That's wonderful. Yeah, so, like, this movie, I don't know. There's not a lot of movies you see where you're like, oh, this is going to have a serious legacy and impact far beyond the time it's actually in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I like the, I felt like the accurate portrayal of Paul and Catherine and Paul's Jim Parsons character.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I like the fact that he just stayed in his character the whole, like, to the end. He was not going to give up being an asshole at all.
Right.
And I loved it. I'm like, it wasn't like a romantic ending with that dude.
Yeah.
It was like, great. Yeah. This is great.
He's like, you're racist and you hate women and you're going to stay that way.
Right. Because in 1961, that would have been what happened.
You're right.
But you also saw, you know, you know what's so funny? This movie was a great example of nobody wanting to be at the bottom. And what I mean by that is, like, so the men treated the women bad, like Mrs. Mitchell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then she treated the black women bad because somebody had to, it just, like, trickled down, like, if they're going to treat me poorly, well, I'm going to treat, like, nobody wants to be the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was another one who was just terrible. And even when she, I guess, did a good thing, it wasn't even good. She was just like, nah.
Yeah, no. She, like, there's that scene where she's in the bathroom.
It didn't
with
change
Dorothy.
Her idea about African Americans at all.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that scene and she's, like, in the restroom with Dorothy, and after they had, like, desegregated the bathroom, when Mrs. Mitchell's like, you know, despite what you think, I don't have anything against you. And she's like, yeah, I'm sure you believe that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what you think.
But you do.
Right.
And it's so funny because when the real Catherine said that never happened, she was like, hell no, I went to the bathroom right there.
Oh.
She's like, who would have time for that?
Well, they certainly had to, like, amp up the drama to make it, like, a cinematic experience.
Yeah,
I'm sure also she didn't need to be, like, called in at the last moment because he's about to launch into space. And they didn't.
And she wasn't allowed in the room.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh.
She was not actually allowed in the room.
That's upsetting.
Yeah. So that was also made up.
Yeah, they got to embellish stuff for.
Yeah, she wasn't allowed in the room, but she did the math.
Great. Good for her.
She got the fucking job done. Yeah, Mrs. Mitchell, I know she's not as bad as Paul, but she pissed me off.
She was.
So many...
She was a woman. It makes her worse.
Every scene she's in, and maybe. No, I mean, like, I guess Kirsten Dunst did a good job because I really
job.
Fucking hated
oh,
her.
Yeah,
she was
this
great.
This whole movie, every time she was on screen, I was just like, what is she going to do now? Because it's like, it's where Jim Parsons' character is outright, like, very straightforward. I don't respect you. I, like, just the way that Mrs. Mitchell would get those underhanded, passive-aggressive
But that's what made it so great, is that they didn't make it, like, They didn't do what every other movie does, make it this obvious racism, because that's not really how a lot of racism is. A lot of it is just how she played it. It's like so layered and intertwined. Mm-hmm. It was her belief system. Right. You know what I mean? Her belief system. And when it's your belief system, you don't really have to put anything on it. And that was a very complicated, I thought, role that I thought she did a really amazing job with.
She played that character, that despicable character.
I was so angry at her.
The other white woman, too, who is working in, like, the space task group, who is, like, just as bad. She didn't get as much screen time, but she was so dismissive of Catherine. She's like,
But do you remember when he said, "Where's the computer? What happened?"
She said, "Oh, she's standing right behind you."
She speaks too.
That was an okay moment. But then later on, when Catherine has to go to the restroom for the first time, and she's like, "Excuse me, where's the restroom?" And the woman goes, "I have no idea where your bathroom is." And then, like, returns to her phone call, just like very dismissive. And I thought it was so.
But I also think it's a product of, you think she was treated well there?
Oh, no.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's also that thing of, like, you have the opportunity to be somebody else's boss. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, women are feeling that, you know, and she probably had a lot of people. You know, I feel like it was more of a rote thing for her, because how many black women actually ever walked in that room? I'm going to say none.
Well, even...
I'm going to say none.
Mrs. Mitchell says that. She's like, this is the first... You're the first...
Because when Catherine walked into that room, everybody was... He gave her the garbage can.
Right, because he thought she was a custodian. Yeah.
Yeah, he gave her the garbage can. Mm-hmm. And you could tell Jim Parsons' character already made up his mind that he was not going to respect her.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And when he told him, Kevin told him, "Oh, you got to do his math too."
Oh, what a blow to his ego.
That made me laugh so hard.
You could, like, see his dick wilt. Like, recede into his body.
Yeah. It just fell off. It was gone.
Like, leaked out of his pant leg. That was such a satisfying moment.
And that happened so many times.
Yeah.
And he's like,
he sucks.
He does, yeah. I wonder, because
I feel like anytime there's a movie based on true events, the family of whoever the villain is retaliates. I wonder if there was any of that in this case. Maybe we'll do some research on it.
Yeah.
Because people love to get money by being like, "He wasn't that bad." It's like,
but he was.
Chances are he was probably worse.
They said it was worse, actually.
Oh,
they said their treatment in this, they said their treatment was actually worse than what was portrayed.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I feel like if they did it accurately, they probably wouldn't get to keep the PG rating. Like,
right, I'm sure, like, racial slurs to kids. Yeah. Were thrown at them.
I can imagine what happened.
One of the points I wanted to make is, why did it take until 2016 for this movie to be made about these people from the 60s? I mean, when was the book published?
The book was published in 2016.
Yeah. I remember I tried to read the book, but it wasn't out yet. Because I actually was told that I was going to have an audition for this movie.
Really?
Yes. I had a general at Fox, and they would tell me about this movie. Oh, and another, like, little nice inside tidbit. Mm-hmm. I had just done a Hotels.com commercial that Ted Melfi directed, who was a director of Hidden Figures.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it was right after that. They were like, "Oh, you're going to have a, you know, general at Fox." And when I saw who's cast, I was like, "Haha, was that a joke?" Like, there's no, like, hello, that cast was amazing. I'm like, yeah, that was cute. But I was trying to get my hand on the book, mm-hmm, and trying to get as much information as I could on the project so that I really wanted to audition for it.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm, I never did.
Well, that's another thing we could talk about, is that another movie directed and written by a white guy.
Yeah.
Why did it take this long?
Yeah. Also, why did it have to be directed by a white guy?
Yeah, that was a big thing. That was a thing. You have this movie about these three African American women, and it didn't go to like Ava DuVernay, mm-hmm, or right, you know, maybe another up and coming African American director.
Yeah,
which is a very interesting story. And for me, I was hugely conflicted because I loved Ted Melfi, mm-hmm, from St. Vincent.
Oh. Yeah, that was a huge movie.
And I think the reason why I booked that Hotels.com commercial was because in my callback, when I went in, I was like, what are you doing here? Because I couldn't believe the director from St. Vincent was the director of my commercial. Yeah. And I was, and I didn't have the wherewithal to be like, see him in this, you know, be like, okay, I think I know who that is, and just be quiet. I was like, oh my God, what are you doing here? This is awesome. Like, literally didn't even care and wound up booking it. But
yeah,
and that one commercial paid for SAG for my health insurance, remember?
Hell yeah. Great.
One commercial, but he was such a great guy. And I remember thinking, oh, but he's like really, he's really good.
Yeah, it's always tricky because he did, I mean, he had his hand in pretty much every part of the movie. He's got the directing, producing, and writing credit. The first draft of the movie was written by a woman.
That's right.
And it was a woman with a lot of experience with NASA, too, who... her name is...
Is it Alison Schroeder?
Yeah. Where she had, like, interned at NASA, grew up near Cape Canaveral the whole bit. So, you know, Ted Melfi didn't write the whole thing, but...
It would have been nice, though.
It
would have been nice to... I would have even liked maybe Ava DuVernay or Dee Reese, who did Bessie and Pariah. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to see one of them do it. Mm-hmm. I would actually like to see Dee do it. It would have been great to see her do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, and Ted Melfi does a good job, and the movie turned out amazing, but it's, like, not his...
It's not his story to tell.
Yeah, it's not his story.
But I also wonder, you know, how would they have been able to get that PG rating? Because Dee is hardcore. Maybe.
I mean...
Maybe.
Depends.
I mean, she had to. I'm sure she could.
Yeah. And the PG rating, I think, is, like, so important for how long this movie will be remembered, too.
Right.
Like, if it
went just
up...
makes it more accessible to young... Like you said, like, it can be screened in schools now for, like, elementary kids.
Yeah, my mom already got a copy of the DVD. She teaches second grade.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, how adorable. Yeah.
Oh, are they sending it to schools?
I think she paid for it out of pocket. And
well, that's what teachers do now.
Yeah, teachers don't...
Even though our head of education doesn't know that, but, you know. That they pay for their own pencils, but you know.
Yeah, their own. Oh God, that's a whole other thing that I could like flip a table over. But my mom and her teacher friends, they all have like a little group, and they take turns buying movies and stuff and help each other out. But anyways, teachers are treated.
But you know
like
what's
garbage.
Amazing too? It's amazing to be. Your mom teaches second grade, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in second grade, you see a movie about three African American mathematicians, like not just black kids, I mean all kids see this. It's like, that's like their kids, their first president was black. It's what they know. That's wild. I mean,
it's so cool. Like, I don't know, that makes me feel good because this movie can have like such a role in like normalizing that to kids early on to the point where it wouldn't seem unusual at all. And it
totally
shouldn't.
And in my family, especially my mom's side, mostly PhDs, men and women. So I was raised around extraordinary African Americans. So it was always like weird to me that people didn't know that. Like, wait, that's like everybody I was raised around.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Like, well, single parent house. I'm like, what's that? I'm like, because I had three generations to deal with. Great grandparents, grandparents, and my parents.
Wow.
You get in trouble at one house, you got in trouble two more times at two other houses. That was not nice.
Well, I mean, a part of that might be that the way black people are portrayed in mainstream media, usually not that great. So...
Right, but it's also interesting to me because most of my life was built around, I'm watching mainstream media probably like y'all, like I'm learning this with you. Like,
yeah.
What the hell are they talking about? Who are they talking about? I remember like growing up, especially when the internet became a big thing. Yeah, I had read things. I knew things were going on in the world. I definitely was not ignorant, not with my parents. But on the flip side, I'm like, my experience was around people who were educated, highly educated. Matter of fact, you didn't have a doctorate. They used to look at you like, whoa, like, what's wrong with you? You're just going to stop there? You underachiever.
You're going to stop at a bachelor's degree? You disgusting.
You know, yeah, I was like, that's exactly. They were like, oh, gosh, you know. My mom's first cousins, all of their children went to Ivy League schools. Like, they all went to, even before that, my aunt was one of the first, I think she's one of the first black women admitted to Harvard Law School, I believe. And she spoke fluent Chinese. I went to study abroad. I speak Japanese, but it's because she studied Chinese, which is why I wanted to take Japanese. So these were influences that I took for granted almost because I figured that everybody, you know, had that experience.
Sure.
That everybody knew that about the African-American experience. That was my norm.
That was your normal, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not that I hadn't seen or experienced, because my dad's side of the family is very different from my mom's, and not that I haven't seen or experienced that as well, but the thing that influenced me the most was my dad's side. I remember being like, gosh, man, these women are rough. They have, like, you know, the standard was, like, really high.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, what's great about this movie is it normalizes a portrayal that you don't often see of the black community. Black women, especially. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I feel like black women are portrayed as caretakers. They're strong and struggling, and they're single mom, and they're all these, like, you gotta, like, literally fight the world to achieve anything. Mm-hmm. You're downtrodden, you know. So it's really, yeah, it's refreshing, because all I see is people like me. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, I understand that. Yeah. That these are women that I relate to.
Mm-hmm. I wish I was brought up around smart people.
That would have been really great.
Or anyone besides white people. I grew up in a town where I went to high school. There were 3 black people in my high school.
Wow.
And 2 of them were adopted by white families. So there was no diversity. There's just none.
I was lucky to grow up in a very diverse city and be exposed to a lot of stuff that I feel like people don't look at a frail white girl and be like, oh, she would know that. But I mean, I'm so grateful for that, because even I remember, like, when I was transitioning from moving home to college, like, you just, some people have no fucking clue, and it's such a wake-up call to...
Yeah, but, you know, I'm from the suburbs, too, and my town was actually, I wouldn't say a large percentage Latino, really, mm-hmm. but it was so segregated, because I didn't go to school with one Latino, maybe one. Oh, yeah. 2. And I remember their names.
Mm-hmm. Say them right now. No, I'm kidding.
No.
Shout out.
But I mean, although my school was a public school, and although my school was a very large public school, I was in an honors program, and there were 2 of us, 2 African-American, and I remember the other one as well. She went to Georgetown. We were in that program, and then 1 Latino, and then 1 Asian girl. So literally, everybody, it felt like I was in a utopia within a society. Everybody else is running around intermingling, and I'm in a world completely separate from everybody else. They even put us in a different wing. You know how where the computers were in that movie?
Yeah.
That reminded me of where we were put as honor students, in a different place away from everybody else.
Huh.
Like, in a different part of campus, almost. And that was, like, a really weird experience for me, because my day, the majority of it, was spent in a majority white environment. Mm-hmm. And then the only time I saw anyone of color was at track practice. And I also play the cello, so that's a whole nother, like... Yeah, so it was really interesting experience for me to be the one person I felt like that knew... I knew so much about my culture, but I realized a lot of people didn't. And I did not feel like... I wasn't really fighting, really, but my mom was, and I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
Until I'm, like, an adult now. My mom was the one who would be like, no. Or my parents, both of them, my dad and my mom, would be like, no. You're going to do a report on this person. And it cannot be, like, people that everybody knows.
Right.
You're going to do something on, you know, this person. So it was really interesting that they had the wherewithal to say, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to, my job is to be the teacher.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of black people don't want to be the teacher, but for my parents, they're like, that's your job. You are going to go in, and because of what you're doing, that inevitably will open other people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that was, like, awesome.
That is great. I'm trying to think if there's anything else about the movie I wanted to say.
It made me want to read the book.
Yeah, same.
I want to get the book. Because, I mean, watching it as as an adult, it makes me want to, you know, you can tell that there's probably a lot of moments that are left out of the movie so it can reach a larger audience, but I want to...
But I also think a lot of women, I mean, couldn't women relate to when he told her, if you were a man, would you want to be an engineer? She'd be like, I would already be one.
Yeah, she's like, I wouldn't have to wish. I would be one.
I would be like, you know what I mean? Like, I would be one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, that's not over. That's not over. Hello.
That's the thing. This movie has, like, it's the ending is very uplifting because it's like they went on to do these things and they were regarded as the most brilliant minds in NASA. And you're like, yeah, good for them. And then you're like, wait a minute. It's 50 years later, over 50 years later, and there's still rampant racism and misogyny all around us.
So. Also, too, like, how do you think that I feel, even with what I do? I play the cello. Mm-hmm. Even now, this is 2017, no one can name, like, a black cellist. Not even male or female. Like, no one. Because at the time that I was doing research, there were no black cellists in a philharmonic in the country.
Oh.
So those firsts are still happening.
Yeah.
Misty Copeland, like, those firsts are still happening. I mean, the reason why I haven't act as a comedian is because there are no black cellists.
Yeah. She's new. She's so fresh.
I can make songs like the most famous black cellist you know, because I'm the only one you probably know. I'm probably the only cellist you know. Other than Yo-Yo Ma, people know.
I know. Yeah, I know Yo-Yo Ma.
Exactly. But, you know, so it's so, like, I'm waiting for the movie of, you know, the first black ballerina, like Misty Copeland, or the first black cellist. Like, we're, you know, there's still more work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited because then, like, give me something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be a first. I want to achieve some stuff over here. So, yeah, you know, there's still areas of life that are still untapped and are waiting.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Our genius.
And we got to lift each other up so we can get there.
And as women, I mean, I think women in general should have been able to relate to, you know, not just African-American women, but, like, if you look at the white women in that movie, they were so, like, oppressed. You can tell they were just suffering, like, because even for Mrs. Mitchell, for her, that's probably, like, kind of a big job, you know, because she's the kind of the boss. She's the coordinator.
Yeah.
But even with that, who knows what her background, what she wanted to really do.
True.
Who knows? Like, who knows?
I think she could have handled her, I don't know, choices a lot better.
Oh, yeah, but it's not even about, like, I'm not saying that her character, I mean, we already know what her character is, but you look at the dynamics between men and women.
Sure,
and between, you know, you're dealing with multiple layers, men, women, African-American, white, and you're just, like, layering all this stuff on there. And I think, you know, when you see the secretary in the, you know, in the
task group.
Yeah. You see, like, the secretary, it's almost like she kind of already knows this is not going to work. You know, she kind of already wrote it off. Like, this is not going to work. I can't tell you how many people see me get on stage with that cello and be like, oh, okay, whatever, man. And then they'll come out to the show and be like, oh, it was really good, actually.
Yeah. Well, because she says to her, she says something like, don't expect Mr. Harrison to warm up to you.
Yes.
Like, and then Mrs. Mitchell.
Because maybe,
like,
he didn't warm up to her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe he never warmed up to her.
Yeah. Very possible.
And then the character of Mrs. Mitchell, as much as I can't stand her, like the like very tightly repressed energy.
Ugh.
It's weird because she's sort of like in the middle of, she is not kind to black women because she needs to feel important.
Yeah.
And then she's constantly taking shit from the white men. And it just kind of results in this weird little ball of fury. Like, you just, mm-hmm. and it's uncomfortable.
Because she probably still had to go home and cook and touch somebody's toes and rub his back after she worked all damn day. Man, forget that.
Right.
She's like, man, I got to listen to Jim tell me what to do.
Hey,
Jim,
listen to
is that roast
Sheldon
done yet?
Gotta listen to Sheldon from Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
All day long.
But she says
brutal
things like, you know, you're the first black woman in this group. Don't embarrass me. And it's like,
so did the other character tell her that too. Don't embarrass us. You know, but it's also like, what's funny about that is she thinks that woman's going to embarrass her. That's the funny part. Like,
uh-huh.
Really? I'm like, you clearly don't know, like, the level of, she was so unaware of how talented they were. All she knows is, I can't believe I had to come down here to get one of you, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You're so unaware of how freaking phenomenal they are. It makes me laugh. All I could think about is that there's a poem by Maya Angelou called Phenomenal Women, or Phenomenal Woman. And I'm like, and our sorority used to always, like, quote this poem.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could think about is, you have no idea how fierce these women are. These women are, throwing circles around you, and all you know. But that's how rote her job is. Oh, I got to get down here, get this thing. All she knows, I got to fill this, fill this, fill this, fill this. I don't want to deal with your issues with wanting a raise, chick. You're lucky in her mind. You're luckier even here.
She says that too.
Yeah, you're lucky.
She's like,
you're
lucky
even here.
Even have a job.
Yes. And really, it really is the reverse. You're lucky you have a job.
Right.
Because they're all so much smarter than you.
Yeah.
She, for real, she would have rocked, Dorothy would have rocked her job so hard, that woman would be unemployed.
Oh, for sure.
She'd be back in the kitchen having more babies. By Jim.
Jim with his roast.
Jim can fuck off in this movie. I found out a little bit more about the charity screenings. Where quite a few of them were sponsored by the actors, and there was also a Girl Scout initiative to get a bunch of Girl Scouts to be able to go, and then there were different ones sponsored by Octavia Spencer, Janelle Monáe, and Taraji P. Henson, also Jim Parsons, also Ted Melfi. And so I think that there was like 15 different cities that ended up getting a ton of young people to get
incredible.
To see the movie.
God, Girl Scouts still around, huh?
They're still,
I know.
Right?
Were you a Girl Scout?
I was a Girl Scout.
So was I.
So was I.
I used to always get the most patches because my dad worked at a college and he'd make everybody come into his office and buy Girl Scout cookies. So I would win every time.
Nice. That's so
the whole college would buy them.
My parents were not motivated in regards to my Girl Scout, and I'm not a salesman, so.
Yeah, I would only ever get like my grandma and my uncle to buy a box, and then I'd be like, I've sold 2 boxes. And I'm like, shut up, Caitlin. Get out of here.
No, we were rocking it.
That's nice. Amazing. Yeah.
I love Girl Scouts until they told us to go camping.
Yeah, I was about to say the wilderness badges are brutal. I'm like, I have no desire. If I had a choice, I would never go outside.
No, my mom and I were like, okay, where's the closest hotel? Like, we are not.
Yeah. We invented indoor plumbing for a reason. I'm not gonna.
I will say that my parents afforded us a certain lifestyle, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
I was like, no, we do not like camping. Maybe I wish they had, what's it called, glamping now? Or is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Glamorous camping?
Yeah, we would totally sign up for that.
Yeah.
But my mom and I were like, oh my God. My mother was like, wear your slippers in that shower. I don't know what's in there. We were terrible. We were just like, this is gross. I was like, we would have been horrible in the wilderness, man. We would have been horrible. And my dad was like, I mean, he's a professor, so my dad would be, my dad used to like take the tour guide's job. The tour guide would be like saying something, and my dad's so smart. I think he is a computer. my dad would literally be like, oh, just to add to that, and my dad knows everything about everything.
Yeah.
And he just retains everything.
I want to meet your parents.
And you would just sit here and watch him,
so
like,
cool.
Can I
just
trade mine?
Watch him. No way. Nah, I'll keep them. They're keepers.
That's
good. I had an intense PTA mom when I was younger. My mom.
One of those.
Yeah. My mom didn't go back to work until I was 11. She used to be a banker before I was born, and then ended up staying home with me and all 10 of my cousins from when before I was born until I was 11. Yeah, so there'd be 10 kids at my house every day.
Sugar.
And then she went back, and she was a PTA mom when she wasn't working and was just taking care of like this brood of children. And then now she works at that school that she used to be at the PTA, and she like went back and got her master's, and now she teaches because I think that she just really wore the principal down by being around for like 10 consecutive years.
Yeah, I mean, my mom probably had to deal with, especially in the honors program, she had to deal with like certain things in terms of teachers, not only just being a black female. There was one honors program where I got we had Regents exams in New York. I got like a 97 on the Regents exam, and they didn't put me in honors English the following year. But they didn't put any women in honors English the following year. Hardly any.
Oh my God.
And my mom like noticed it. My mom was like, no, they had to go and fight to get us in honors English. I didn't know that. My mom was like, you guys are racist and sexist, and these women and these kids need to get into this class. She got a 97 on the bench. Are you crazy? That's my mom.
Oh, terrific. Are there any final thoughts anyone has about the movie?
I loved it. I want more kids to see it.
Like I said before, it was just nice to see my sorority sisters.
That's
go
so
up
cool.
There.
I didn't know that.
Because like that pride is like what we were raised around. So it was just like, yeah, I get this. And it was just great to see that.
Oh, obviously cool. This passes the Bechdel test.
Yes.
So we should usually...
Oh, you think? Because they're talking about math. Say that,
yeah, like there, it's like almost a comical passing of the test.
Yeah, it happens. And I mean, I only wrote down like the scenes that happen in the first half hour, and there are like six of them where it passes. Like in the first scene where the three women are together fixing the car. They're talking about the car. They're talking about their jobs at NASA. Then there's a room full of women, the one that like Dorothy's handing out assignments to. They're all talking to each other there. Mrs. Mitchell comes in and is like, hey, who can handle analytic geometry here? Most of their conversations, whenever there are two women talking to each other, are not about a man. It's usually about their job, space travel, math, you know, any number of things. There's a ton of scenes where it passes the test. No question about it.
It reminds me of my first job I had.
What
my
was first job?
Was a Moody's Investor Service. It's a rating agency. So they rate companies, Fortune 500 companies.
Okay.
And my job in the summer was to use a Gini coefficient to figure out the average income of homes in certain areas. And I remember it was really statistics.
Uh-huh.
And I remember like sitting there like telling people, this is what I do for the summer. And I'm like 17, 18 years old. And I remember people looking at me like, nah, man, we don't even know what you're talking about. This sounds crazy. And I remember like thinking about that first job. And granted, I mean, I love math and I'm great at it, but not the way these women are. But it made me feel really good that I was like throwing out stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah. And people are like, oh, what the hell is she talking about?
It reminds me of my job as a Hooters delivery driver.
Oh, man. Bringing it back.
No, actually, like, I was.
Were you? Is that real?
That was a real thing.
Delivery and driver.
I was a delivery driver for Hooters.
You were Uber, like
Uber
pre
Eats.
Uber Eats.
Yeah. But no, actually, I was the only woman they hired to be a delivery driver, and most of the other guys got fired. So I was like one. I was like,
you're probably reliable.
You were the last one. You're
the last one. I kind of
your
was.
Story must be told.
It must.
Call Melfi. I had a math job once. I wouldn't say I excelled at it, but I worked at the comptroller's office for all the summers in college. Still couldn't exactly tell you what a comptroller does, but I did crunch a lot of numbers in that very cold office full of people who did not really know how to use computers. That was mostly what I did, was walk around and tell almost retirees how to, you know, use Microsoft Word.
You were like the Dorothy. You like taught I was, them
yeah,
how
yeah,
to,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was the Dorothy
yeah.
of the Massachusetts
We didn't talk a lot about
office.
Her, but like, I mean, she was great. And she like had the foresight to know, like,
to learn the computer.
Oh,
machines. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh my, she snuck in there to learn about the machines.
She
that was
snuck
dope.
In, and then she stole a book from the library.
That was
I love
dope.
That speech she gives. She's like, I pay taxes. Everything in this library was paid by taxes. It's mine to do.
But do you realize the impact of not being able to get the knowledge?
Yeah.
Knowledge being withheld from you. I can't even wrap my mind around that.
I did not realize until this movie that libraries were segregated like that. That there was
hell yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, if you even think, forget about just like in this movie before, what was the one thing the slave master did not want the slaves to know? They didn't want them reading.
To read, yeah.
You cannot read. They didn't want literate people because literate people know how to fight back and how to fight that. They didn't want them to have the tools.
Right.
So what do? If you want to keep someone down, you take their education. You withhold knowledge.
Yeah.
Right. And that goes back to having to go to court to take a night class. Like
Exactly. Limiting access to education.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And basically, like, humiliating people.
Absolutely.
For having
demoralizing.
Yeah. For needing to jump through all those hoops to even have access. It's like, it just...
And then when she walks into that class... And, like, when she finally gets, like, she petitions, she, like, does all the things she needs to do, and she finally is granted access to this class she needs to take, and she walks in, and it's a bunch of white dudes, it's a white teacher, and they're just like, oh, what do we do? This curriculum isn't designed for women. And she's like, I think I'll be, like, it'll be fine.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, the fact that it needs to be easier for women.
Yeah.
That's unfathomable to me, because... The women in my family were so intelligent. I feel like they were smarter than the men half the time.
The attitude was like, oh, your small woman brain, how could you ever possibly handle this information? Man, it just reminds me of that. Wasn't there like a Barbie where you like pulled the string and it was like, math is hard?
Oh, yeah.
But do you think it's a portrayal of white women?
what that like
that frail that like you don't know as much. I mean, obviously in this movie it was like, you know, it was a African American woman, but I mean, I feel like I'm like, what is this? Like, I don't know that. Oh, this woman, maybe she's not as smart, really. But then maybe when I got older, it made more sense that, oh, men really think this. That was, see, I was so blinded by that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so blinded because as a woman, as a girl in my class, I was whipping those dudes' ass, so I didn't even really think about gender.
Right.
Yeah.
Like gender didn't even come into my brain like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't occur to me until maybe high school, but probably later, because I mean, like, I love everyone in my family, but the males in my family are 100% betas. Like, yeah. Every major male figure in my life was a beta, is a beta to this day.
Yeah.
And so, like, and even down to like me and my cousins I don't know exactly what the split between girls and boys is, about half and half, but the girls that I grew up with, we were, you know, we were whipping their ass at stuff mm-hmm. at school, and that was just sort of what it was, and, yeah. and what it always was.
Oh, yeah, and you know what, when I think about it actually too, that's actually true. It's like, I don't think it's a race thing. I think that men just really think they're smarter than women.
Yeah, I think
I
think maybe women of color experience it to a greater degree, where, you know, people assume, oh, you're not going to be as smart, you're not going to know as much, etc.
Yeah, but
than white women. But...
Yeah, that's so interesting. Like, I just think it's an interesting thing to sit there and be. You're right, and you sit there and you, and but that's something I don't understand. Like, I understand it intellectually, but in reality, in experience, I'm like, nah, this is not true.
Right, no.
This is ridiculous.
Where it just, like, takes you a really long time to realize that that is actually what's happening. Like, I remember this very, like, specific memory in college of, like, I was starting to do comedy stuff, and I was, like, taking an interest in it, and I'd been, like, feeling weird for a while, and then it just hit me. I'm like, oh, you just don't think that I can do this. Like, mm-hmm. and it hadn't occurred to me.
Until college, I think college hit me.
Yeah.
That people, also too, I remember being in, I'm a decent math student, but I'm really good at like microecon and statistics.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was like more my thing. In my microecon class, which like everybody used to always fail, these are, you know, gray on a curve. Mm-hmm. And I remember they were like, well, somebody destroyed the curve because she got an A+. It was me.
You fucked up the curve?
Nice.
And I realize now, he never said who destroyed the curve, but he did when I did. It did not hit me until much later. I was like, I wonder if he'd said that because I was a black woman in this class of mostly white dudes.
Do you think he was calling attention to it because he like wanted you to be, he wanted the other students to be mad at you?
No, they were mad. I don't think that was his intention.
Okay.
I think he wanted them to acknowledge that I had done this.
Yeah, that's cool then.
But they were mad.
Yeah.
They were pissed. Like, you know, I was like, whatever, man.
Yeah, study
harder.
Yeah.
Tell you.
Curve destroyer. That's a brutal position to be in.
Loved it.
Yeah.
And I try to achieve it every time.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
No mercy.
Yeah.
So let's rate the movie.
Yes.
On our nipple scale.
Our
0 to 5
famous
nipples.
Nipple scale.
This is another movie that I'm going to give a very high nipple rating to, maybe even a 5.
You're going to do it?
Like a 4.5 or a 5. Yeah, I'm going to commit. I'm going to give it a 5 nipple. I love the way the three main women are portrayed. They're constantly like uplifting each other. I just love them, that the movie shows women in a way we haven't seen before. Typically, three black women who are aerospace engineer geniuses. That was a really cool thing to see on screen. And I just really enjoy this movie, and it makes me feel a lot of feelings that I don't like to admit that I have, because feelings are dumb.
They're in there.
They're in there, buddy.
I need to let them out.
Yeah.
I know.
Forget that.
I'm trying. But,
I want to do is talk about my feelings all day, every day.
High five.
I pay someone a lot of money to listen to my feelings.
That's smart. I should learn how to do that.
Because I love to talk about my feelings so much. Anyways. I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 for sure. Yeah, I mean, for all the reasons that you said, also just every character in this movie is portrayed with nuance that I think that if the attention to detail hadn't been so strong, it would have been very easy to paint every character in this movie with far broader strokes, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't have been as effective. I'm so happy this movie exists and that people will be able to watch it. I like want to show my kids this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hardcore five nipples.
Yeah.
Hardcore. You talk about three African-American women, mathematicians, who are portrayed layered, multidimensional characters. Hell yeah. Five nipples.
We did. This is the second movie that's gotten out of, like, whatever, the 25 we've done, that yeah. have gotten the 5 out of 5 treatment.
The first one was Moana.
Yep.
Nina, do you have anything you want to plug? Or where can people find you online?
I have a website, ninadaniels.com. I'm huge into Snapchat and Instagram. So on Instagram, ninadaniels.official. And Snapchat, I'm on I'm Nina's Playground. And I have a monthly show, like you said earlier, mm-hmm. here at the Nerd Melt, mostly the last Tuesday of the month. Nina Daniels presents The Playground, and it's awesome and a lot of fun.
Yeah. Anything you want to plug, Jamie?
Yes, this episode is going to come out in the future. But right now, I made a bunch of pinatas today. I'm doing a live stream at Jash tomorrow that you'll be able to watch by the time this episode comes out in its entirety. It's called Swan Lake Live from a Locked Basement. I'm going to do ballet. I made a bunch of new cartoons for it. And I've got to go finish making the pinatas for it. It takes place on the day of Ronald Reagan's assassination. And I've got a big pinata of Jodie Foster's head. I'm going to smash it.
I love everything about that.
Spoiler alert. I was going to say the same thing. I'm like, ditto to what Caitlin said.
So watch that. And cool. And at Hamburger Phone.
Yeah, I don't have any cool Swan Lake projects or anything like that, but you can follow me at Caitlin Durante on Twitter. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, too, at Bechdelcast. You can email us. We haven't talked about the email. I don't even know if we've gotten any. I should check it. But anyway,
we just said, email us. We don't check it.
Maybe I'll edit that part out. We'll see.
We answer face. It says on our Facebook page that we answer messages very quickly. I was like, hell yeah, go us.
Very awesome. But yeah, find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. You can email us at thebechdelcast@gmail.com and rate and review us on iTunes. And we're on SoundCloud.
Ooh.
And we're on Libsyn.
Yeah, shout out to Aristotle. We're on SoundCloud, baby.
Woo. Thank you so much, Nina, for being here.
Yes, thank you guys. Thank you, Aristotle. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
And so reach for the stars, guys. It's a Hidden Figures joke.
I know. I got it.
I was like, are you gonna monologue right now?
This is the famous Caitlin soliloquy hour.
Yeah, yeah, just a moment of zen to end it. Yeah.
Okay. All right, yeah. Bye.
Bye, gang.
Toodles.